Boston Red Sox, Mike Timlin. This is the intro song they used to bring Mike Timlin in from the bullpen, Bob.
It's great. It's great. Some of our guys out there are wondering what happened to that show that used to do all of that kind of mellow music coming in, you know. So it's
we've
good.
Gone harder on.
That's right.
This is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. This is Bob Belts. And we are glad you joined us this morning. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for letting us know from time to time that you're with us. We don't know you all, but we love you. And if we did know you, we'd love you even more. And what we try to do each week is bless you by introducing you to a special guest that we think is just doing a great job. And I know every week I'm blessed by the people we have in this chair doing these interviews. So you're going to be glad today you tuned in, stayed with us to meet our guest, Mike Timlin, a former major league pitcher and a good friend of ours from Denver here. So, Mike, welcome to the program.
Appreciate that. Glad to be here.
So this music would crank up, and the bullpen coach would look down and say, Timlin, you're in.
Yeah, the music would usually start. Right as they open the gate, you know, so that way the guy who's running the music would, you know who's coming in.
When did that tradition start in baseball? How many years ago?
You know, I think it was more of a, for the hitters. You know, they'd have a little certain song that they wanted to hear. You know, it got them fired up going to the plate, and they'd have what they call their walk-up songs.
So, Bob, I don't know if you remember watching Timlin pitch, but what are you, 6'4"?
6'4".
So yeah. They put you on a mound. How tall is a major league pitching mound?
Depends on what park you're in.
They move
usually,
around.
Usually it's about 16 to 18 inches tall.
And the rules allow for a little
different... little leeway here and there, yeah.
Really? So that means, wow, you were as big as you looked to me when you were thrown on television. So that size worked to your advantage, though, and you played how many years in the big leagues?
18 years in the big leagues.
18 years. And how many world championship teams were you on?
I was on 4 world championship teams, 2 with the Toronto Blue Jays back in 92 and 93, back-to-back. First team back-to-back since the Oakland A's, and then which were in the 70s. And then in 2004 and 2007 with the Boston Red Sox.
You got a favorite of those 4 championship years?
Well, 2004 was probably as special as 92, which would be my first one. And those two are probably my most favorite. I mean, I enjoyed it.
2004, you were, boy, it seems like they used you every night. Did you lead the league in appearances that year?
Not that year. The next year I did, though.
You did?
In 2005, yes. I pitched in 81 ball games in 2005, so we have 162.
Holy moly.
So it was like I was pitching every other day.
And why are some bodies made that way, where you can loosen your arm up and not destroy yourself and pitch every other game?
I can't sit here and tell you that I was loose every game.
So some nights you don't feel
some,
like.
Some nights you just don't feel like going, and it hurts, but. You know, you push through it. Unfortunately, some of the more modern relievers now, you know, they're like, well, it hurts and I don't think I can pitch, and they'll go to somebody else. I, on the other hand, and a lot of guys that I learned to play from, you know, you get to the point where it's like you pitch or you don't, you'll go down to the minor leagues. And, you know, I love playing. I love pitching. So I tried to pitch as much as I possibly could.
So right now, these guys are in spring training. I think pitchers and catchers reported just two days ago. And are they taking it slow, or are they expected to come in there ready to go?
Well, anymore, you're expected to come in and be able to perform pretty quickly. They still take it easy. First couple of days, if I remember correctly, you'll have 3 days where you're throwing 5-minute bullpens.
Wait a minute. If you remember correctly, you've only been retired, what, two seasons?
Maybe.
Yeah. One season.
You don't forget how to remember correctly till you get to be about our age. That's yeah. when.
Then you can't remember anything.
Well, various teams will do it a little bit differently. But the way we did it, first 3 days we had 5-minute bullpens, and then they started breaking guys up, you know, in two or three different groups. That you'd throw like every other day, and then they'd get batting practice in. So the first couple of days, you know, where you're doing fielding practice and you're doing, you know, all the throwing drills, you can go out, you can long toss, you can throw your bullpens, get ready for spring training, but as soon as you start bending over and picking the baseball up and throwing it to first base and covering first base and, you know, covering third base on a bunt and home and all that stuff.
That looks easy on television.
Yeah. You do it 100,000 times, you know, in spring training. The first night or the first morning after you do that for about 2 or 3 days, you put your toes on the floor and your both calves will cramp up almost every time. Doesn't matter who you are, your calves are so sore from, you know, just running differently. It's amazing.
Just different muscles working. And
the walk to the bathroom was the longest thing from my life. I'm just like, I'm never going to make it to the bathroom. I couldn't move my ankles. Yeah.
I didn't know I had this much in common with major league ballplayers, so this is good.
You know what else you have in common? Bob Belts, who's the pastor over at Highline Community Church, the co-host of this show. I've always said, Bob, you are an incredible artist. You've written, I believe, is it 14 books now?
Yeah, I haven't written as many books as Mike played years in the
Well,
major
you're going to get
so.
There. And then to prepare a sermon like you do week in and week out, I can't even imagine how many people like me would see the monotonous aspect of that. But you just do it, and you do it well every time, just like you, Mike. And
that's
did it get monotonous to you, or was spring training some part of everyday fun, or did you ever just think, wow, tough.
There were some days, you know, you get into the later part of, you know, spring training when, you know, the games are going on and it's the same routine every day. But for the first 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, it's an adventure every day. And plus, you know, you have, as I got to be an older player, you have younger guys coming in, they're asking you questions, you know, and you see the amazement and the wonder in their eye, you know, what's going to happen every day? What's going to happen today? So, you know, you get a lot of pranks and, you know, things going on in spring training.
A lot of dead at times, so guys are cranking up the pranks.
Oh, yeah. So
were you the prankster?
No, I helped a few times here and there, but, you know, you mess with the trainers a little bit. You know, you'll pour a bottle of Joy or Dawn in the hot tub after they've just got finished filling it up, or, you know, and somebody will turn it on, you know, and the room turns to foam, you know.
Just Bo did that in the baptismal font at the church. It was really very.
I can see that.
It was tricky.
I haven't done that yet, but now you've triggered your idea. Now, Greg Maddox, who became a friend of mine through Teammates for Kids, this charity I worked with, but he was kind of a nutcase prankster, and he looked like your friendly high school.
Oh my goodness,
professor!
Yeah.
But he was kind of nuts, wasn't he?
I heard he was a silent killer. You know, he always had something going on in the brain. And you sat there and watched him. You know, we'll watch it on TBS or, you know, we watch the Braves pitch. And you see him sitting on the bench and you always look. He always had, you know, it's like the wheels were turning all the time. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, something's going to happen. You know, and he's got to have an outlet. So I don't doubt that he was the prankster.
I bet nobody messed with you too much at your size.
luckily enough, you know, I hit a few people in my career, but no one ever came out to visit me on the little dirt area.
We had your good friend Mike Myers, former big league pitcher, on the program a couple weeks ago, and we're going to get to family and faith issues with you, but tell me first, because we do have sports fans listening, about when you got the call to the big leagues and what it felt like, and can you remember the moment?
You know, I never really had it's funny, because spring training in 1991 – was my first big league camp. And I just got back from Venezuela playing in winter ball for 4 months. And from the beginning of 1990, spring training, when I was working out with AAA, got sent back down to A-ball. Pretty furious about that.
Yeah, what'd you do wrong to get that long a jump?
You know what? They actually changed my job. So I became from one of the many, many starters that we had in the Toronto organization to a closer in A-ball. So I pitched in Dunedin, Florida, led the for the first half of the season, I led, you know, all of baseball in saves. I had 22 saves by the All-Star break. Mm. And we had an incredible team. It was kind of ridiculous, but we were 54-13 in our first half.
That's pretty good.
So it was a little easy to have saves. I went to Double-A. Got asked to go down to winter ball, took a week off, went down to instructional league, pitched down there, make sure I was all ready. all rested, and went down to Venezuela for 4 months. Got put on the big league roster. And the only way I knew that is because we read the paper, you know, reading it in Spanish, you know, by breakfast. And got put on the big league roster.
It wasn't quite a Roy Hobbs moment.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, wow, this is really cool. But reading the only thing I really realized, I was going to spring training. You know, big league spring training. I'm like, I'm going to get big league meal money. This is going to be great. But I only expected to be there maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And, time kept rolling. I was throwing the ball really well. It was in between myself and a guy named Willie Frazier, who had come over from the California Angels.
Lefty?
No, he's a right-hander. Sinker baller, just like me.
How hard were you throwing then?
Hard. I was,
Mid-90s?
I was high 90s, with a sink and a slider. So, I was 25 years old, and Willie was probably 27, 28. You know, he was still kind of young. I was built a little bit better than he was. I threw way harder than he did. And I kept waiting for the call to be called into the office and say, we appreciate, everything you've done. You're going to go to AAA, whatever. And I had a clubhouse guy in there named Darren Engelmeyer, and I knew him from the minor leagues. And every day I'd walk in, later on in the camp, E-man, when's it going to happen, dude? When's it going to happen? He's like, just go play, just relax and go play. And he knew, but he couldn't tell me. And finally, he got all the way down to the last day, and I brought my stuff. I put my stuff on the bus. We were flying to New York, play the Mets for an exhibition game before we went to Toronto.
But somewhere in your mind, you're still
somewhere
thinking
in my mind, someone's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, "Okay, you're going to have to go back down to AAA." But it never happened. So I went to the big leagues in 1991 and never left. So I never really played AAA ball. I went from AA to winter ball to the big leagues.
And almost 2 decades, you stayed there.
Right.
That's incredible. And when did faith in Christ become part of your life? Was it early, middle, late, after? I'm not even sure where your journey began.
Well, I was born and raised Catholic with my mom in West Texas. And, my whole thing with God was...
Your folks were divorced, or why did you say
that? My father took off before I was born, so I never really knew him. So, it was just me and my three older sisters and my mom. So I had four moms.
And you never never reconnected with your dad?
Not really. Didn't care to. I just figured, I guess I looked at it like, if he didn't care to know me, I don't care to know him. Yeah. So that's just how I approached it.
And bad choice on his part. You're one of the great guys I've ever met.
I appreciate that.
Anyway, you got four moms raised.
I got four moms, and, my whole thing with God was, I was raised in football country. So I'm a Cowboy fan, and I know that's not real big around here, but
I was going to say, I'm sorry.
That's just how it happens.
Hey, I'm an Okie. I like the Cowboys and the Sooners and all that stuff.
So, it was an hour on Sunday before all the football games. And, it was just like, okay, you sit, you kneel, you stand up, you sit, you kneel, you stand up, okay, that's 30 more minutes, get my penance for an hour and be done with it.
Sit, kneel, stand up, look at your watch. Right. That is a great way to describe your experience in the Catholic Church. Have you heard that before?
Bad. Nope, haven't.
Anyway. Haven't really heard that one, huh?
Yeah, that's good.
But, I accepted God in my life in a batting cage in Dunedin, Florida. In 1986, or I'm sorry, 1989. And, I had heard a guy's testimony. He was blind, and this guy had a joy in his life like I'd never seen. And second time I heard his testimony, it was like he was talking right to me. And then, I gave my life to God right then and there. And I thought, after that happened, man, this is great. I've got baseball. I'm getting paid. I got God in my life, and what else do I need?
Dawn.
Well, my wife Dawn came, later on, another year later, and
but you felt pretty content. You're saying after you?
Yeah, I thought I had it all, and I met my wife after winter ball, and didn't start dating her till about 3 years later. I was dating her best friend for a while, so in between there. But I got back from Venezuela. And in 90, at the end of 90, right at the beginning of 91, and, We had gone to the Caribbean World Series, and she was in Miami. It just so happens. And we walked on the beach, and, you know, I'd tried to date her, you know, 3 years prior, but she didn't want to have anything to do with it. And, you know, we just started hanging out, and, you know, she came to visit me in Toronto, and, you know, things got better after that. You know, I got married in 1992, and, you know, things were great for me. You know, I had baseball, I had an awesome wife, and I had God in my life, and I thought it was great. And grew up in Toronto, got some great friends there. You know, we all grew together. You know, we had a solid little core of Christians, and we went, you know, had Bible studies on Wednesdays, and you know, went to PAO in the wintertime, and, you know, it was great. And after I got traded out of Toronto in 1997, you know, things went downhill. I mean, I thought I had it all. And, you know, you figure you got it figured out, and God's helping you out.
Rough times in terms of your marriage, your faith, or everything?
Well, you know, you always hear about guys in baseball that you know, kind of walk off the path. And I did. I did a lot of things without going into too many details to ruin my marriage and lose my family and, you know, pretty much be done with baseball. And, you know, if I didn't have
just
such
bad choices,
you know. You know, I got to drinking and, you know, running around and doing all that other stuff. And
one, you know, leads the other sometimes.
Yeah, I fell to a lot of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't have such an awesome wife and an awesome God in my life, you know, I wouldn't be married and probably wouldn't have my kids. Mm-hmm. So
what turned that around for you?
Well, you know, it always comes down to the point when your loved one comes to you and looks you in the face and says, you know, what are you doing? Mm. You know, why is this happening? And, you know, and they throw all the facts out on the table. And when you finally see it in front of you, you're like, wow. You know, so once she called me out on it, things started turning around. Mm. And had she not, you know, and she just got fed up with it. And had she not done that and us have some counseling in our life. I mean, the people that were in our life that were surrounded by us, you know, with Christianity, they helped hold our marriage together where we didn't want to, or she didn't want to. And, you know, and God holding them in our life, keeping us accountable, you know, brought me to where I am now.
Sometimes the fact that you're married, especially when you're Christians, is more of a reason to stay together than the fact that you're in love or not in love or feel the warm feelings. And so that's incredible that y'all had that group surrounding you and stayed disciplined.
I appreciate you sharing that story too, because, you know, I think there's a lot of guys out there that don't get it back turned around, you know, turn it back around. And, so I think that's an encouragement to guys out there listening that, you know, you can turn it around. As a matter of fact, when Highline Community Church sort of new deal for me. And one of the things that I felt like was I'd almost like to change the name of the church to Second Chance, you know, because so many people need a second chance. It's almost like, you know, come back home. Let's, you know, get things turned around. And I think you sharing that, is a real encouragement, or at least a challenge, to a lot of guys that are in that position right now. And, you know, that there is hope. You can get it turned back around and get it on track again.
Well, it's no question. I mean, you know, unfortunately, in the world that we live in today, you know, infidelity runs pretty rampant. Mm-hmm. And if both people in the relationship don't have God, mm-hmm. or if one of them does and one of them doesn't, things will collapse. And fortunately, you know, Dawn and I both had God in our life. Mm. And, you know, to be honest, she was ready to say, you know, to heck with it. We're done. And a lot of people said, you know, God can turn this around. He really can. You know, he can change lives. And, you know, God is a God of second chances. Mm-hmm. And if you look throughout your life, you know, even probably the strongest Christians you know, you could ask them, did God ever give you a second chance? Mm. And they will say many times he did, and it, you know, in different aspects of life. So if they, you know, my advice to you guys that are listening, or if you're having trouble, you know, don't give up, because God can turn things around.
Good word.
And I happen to know Don's quite a bit better athlete than you, isn't he?
Oh, that's not a question at all.
Yeah. She still does a lot of running, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. She's run the Boston Marathon, completed the Boston Marathon 5 times, Chicago Marathon once, Disney Marathon once. She regularly runs up the side of Pikes Peak.
Wow.
She's done that 4 or 5 times.
I got worn out driving it, so this is, you know.
I'm getting tired of hearing this.
I know. Oh, I was going to say, Bo and I have actually watched parts of the Boston Marathon five yeah. times. So
she's amazing.
You encourage her now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like she encouraged you.
I'm actually trying to, run a little bit here and there just so, we can spend some time together.
You know, one of the things that has been cool just getting to know you and being at Narrowgate together and seeing you is I've always thought you seem to have such a neat friendship and relationship with the other Mike, mm-hmm. Mike Myers. Yeah. And how did you guys hook up?
We I've known Mike. I played against him, since he got to the big leagues. Yeah. And when he got in Detroit, I was in the American League. So that's where I got to know who he was. But in 2004, he was traded over to the Boston Red Sox and played on our world championship team. Mm-hmm. And we sat, you sit next to somebody in the bullpen for 100-plus games, you get to know a whole lot mm-hmm. of people. So he played with me in 2004 and then 2005. Mm-hmm. So, and we had come out for Robin's, his wife's birthday out here. And, she's talking to Dawn and, there's a house next door for sale, so she went and looked for it, looked at it, and then we looked in a few other areas, a little farther south, just south of Castle Rock, and we found some really nice houses, but we really liked the area that they were in, and we live right next door to each other.
That's really cool.
It's almost like being in the bullpen again.
Yeah, that is great. And that's got to be an encouragement to both of you to have each other and both share not only your background, but to be able to encourage each other in your faith too.
Absolutely. It's nice. I got to, when I first came out here, I asked him, I said, where do you go study? And he goes, well, I go to Narrowgate on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's pretty awesome. So, I started showing up. Now y'all have to deal with me.
Yeah, we love having you guys.
We got to say Dan and Phyllis LaChance's names because I remember Dan LaChance, who's become a good friend through Narrowgate. This guy's a Boston Red
Sox. He's a good guy.
Nut. And so the first time he met Mike, I said, this is my friend Mike Timlin, and this is Dan LaChance. And when you walked away, he's like, is that like Mike Timlin with the Boston Red Sox? Well, he's not with Boston anymore. He lives here. He comes to Bible study. But I'm surprised you came back the way LaChance started asking you questions.
That's every Boston fan.
Yeah.
Well, let's ask some questions. Hang on. Boston, good or bad to play there?
Great.
Just fire quick.
Great place to play.
Not cramped,
Not cramped. It's a big town, has a small town feel, and the people are awesome.
And the media doesn't drive you nuts like you read so many reports about?
Well, you just blow it off. I don't read the paper. So, I know what happens on the field and what happens, in my head. So they can make up whatever story they want to make up.
How about best pitch you can remember throwing, most crucial situation when you thought, I need to do this right now, and you got the job done? What was it?
I threw quite a few. I've been in some major situations, but probably the last one, I threw was a slider to strike, I can't remember, it may have been Tulowitzki out in the 2007 World Series.
All right. Sorry, Tulo.
That's right. Sorry, Denver. No, that's great. You had three or four great questions you asked Mike, best batter you ever faced.
Yeah, who was yours?
Probably the top two were Don Mattingly and Wade Boggs.
How about favorite stadium besides Fenway?
Yankee Stadium, old Yankee Stadium.
Old Yankee Stadium. What'd that feel like walking in there?
Amazing.
The ghosts of the...
Yeah, amazing. When you walk out on the grass and that the great players, almost every great player that's ever played the game has gone through, that stadium and walked on the same dirt. It's unbelievable.
That's a good feeling. Well, one of the best here, Bob. Don't you love that story of recovery in terms of his marriage?
Absolutely. And I'm just glad I just think it's great for guys listening out there to be encouraged and know that you know, if you're going through that kind of thing in your marriage, or you're feeling discouraged about, you know, you're not connected spiritually, and you know, we want to let you know that you can be, you can turn it around, and we'd invite you to come be a part of Narrowgate, come to Highline. There's opportunities for guys to do that. So
thank awesome. You for being here, Mike.
I really appreciate it.
You're a great friend and a wonderful guy.
Thank now, you. Do we get to hear this song again? That, you know,
that brings him in.
It wasn't an excellent song. It was always an interesting song.
We'll see y'all next week. Yeah. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Mike.